Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Michael Keegan, your host, and our guest today is Michael Astrew, Commissioner of the U.S. Social Security Administration. Also joining us from IBM is Nicole Gartner. So, Michael, in the last segment, you mentioned that a good leader communicates their vision and how they're going to get there. So I'd like to turn our focus on the strategic plan you folks are developing and your five-year strategic plan. Could you give us a sense of the strategic vision that's outlined in the plan, some of the goals, but more particularly, give us some insight on how you went about developing it?
So I think the most important thing that we did for each of our strategic plans, particularly for the first one, was to improve our management information. We kept a number of statistics, in some sense too many, because if you asked a simple question as to how long does it take us to do X, you would get three or four different answers depending on which component in the agency was recording that. We did not have standard definitions. And so we would talk past each other. We would confuse the Congress. You couldn't even really set goals in some sense because everybody was defining the task very differently. So one of the things that we spent a lot of the first 18 months doing was first making uniform the definitions for everything that was important in terms of defining whether we were succeeding or failing. And then when we got past that step, we were able to start asking, okay, what else should we be recording that we're not? And that's still an ongoing process. We got a couple more data elements that we're trying to get into our packages now. But what a manager at Social Security can do today is go on the intranet. There's a monthly report, comes in very quickly after the end of the month, that gives us the monthly and the annual numbers for how we're doing on everything that we think is important in terms of measuring performance, with a little color coding it to make it a little easier graphically, whether we're going the right direction or the wrong direction. And I think that's tremendously important. You have to be careful about managing just to metrics because you can have unintended consequences. And that's a mistake that a lot of rookie and poor managers make. And you have to remember that quality is always important, and that doesn't always show up in metrics. So we've made very conscious decisions to blow to pieces certain metrics progress that would impress the Congress, impress the outside world in the name of quality. So for instance, pending cases is an overrated way of measuring backlog because, you know, it doesn't matter how many people are in the line in the grocery store. What matters is how long it takes to get to checkout.
May I ask, though, to what extent is the fiscal realities of the day factored into your shaping your new strategic plan? Were the assumptions based on the realities?
They were, and I think it made it much harder. So the plan that we did in 08 was predicated on some realistic optimism about somewhat better congressional funding. And that was, in fact, right, because we had 3 years where we did quite well with the Congress and was enormously helpful in terms of bringing down the backlogs. It was much tougher writing a strategic plan in the context of two straight years of budget cuts, losing 7,000 employees net over 2 years, because it's very hard to take on much in the way of new initiatives when you're just trying to hold on to kind of what you have. So we did the best we could with what we had. It's not as visionary and optimistic a document as the previous one, but I think it's realistic.
Over the last 4 years or so, how has your agency demonstrated the nexus between adequate funding and being able to achieve the mission? And what are the external factors that really affect whether you can meet your strategic vision and really aspire to achieve the mission?
Well, as you get toward the end of your term, you know, you do think a little bit, you know, what have I contributed? You know, have I lived up to my own expectations? And I think one of the areas where I've been able to make a significant contribution was to change the legislative strategy when it came to discussions about funding. The agency is a wonderful place, and they are some of the most motivated, can-do people possible. But I think for a long time, we went up to the hill with that sort of can-do attitude, and we really ended up hurting the agency and the people that we serve because we'd go up and we'd ask for what we thought we needed, and the responsible people, that's nice, but can you do it with that minus 5%? And the answer is, well, it'll be a lot harder, but we're a can-do agency, we'll do it. So we did not want to tell the Congress what would not happen if they did not fund at a certain level. And we are so big and so complicated, we developed not only the very prominent disability hearing backlog, but lots of other backlogs, too, on work that is still very important to get done on a timely basis. And that was not discussed the way that it should have been. So going back to what I said earlier about clear, candid communication with employees, I may be wrong, but I'm consistent because I believe in exactly the same thing when it comes to communicating with Congress. And for a while, that worked extremely well. We had a 3-year stretch where we did, I believe, on average, better than any of the other large domestic agencies. Congress heard the concerns, decided that we were right, and responded. The last couple of years, you know, it's been mostly across the board funding, and I think that hurts us disproportionately for a couple reasons. One is Congress put what was essentially operating money into the Recovery Act and then didn't count that as part of our baseline going forward. So we started at a lower baseline than comparable other federal agencies. Second, we don't really have very much other than buildings and people in terms of expenses. So if you're a grant-making agency, you might not like it, but you can do 3% fewer grants and 3% less money, and you've got some flexibilities in responding to cuts. We don't have those. We have entitlements, we have people, we have buildings. And so what is happening, and I think Congress still is having trouble understanding the wreckage that it's creating with these kinds of reductions in staffing, we have no real choice but to consolidate facilities. And so they all think that they've done the right thing when they vote at the funding level, and they talk about government becoming leaner, more innovative, and efficient. But then when you do the things to become leaner and more efficient, if it affects their districts, they become extremely upset. We're having a lot of unpleasant conversations with the Congress because we are consolidating facilities. It's not just the money we save by consolidating facilities. We can't hire, we can't backfill employees. You know, we have to take hundreds of millions of dollars out of the budget, and it's hard. And so it's been a very difficult couple of years.
Michael, I'd like to switch to a specific program, the disability program. And it would be nice for our audience to understand a little bit about it before we delve into some of the successes you've had in re-architecting it, if you will. What are some of the key steps in the disability process?
So I think the first thing is to realize we really have two programs, very similar in terms of their programmatic requirements. But one is an insurance program. It's something that all Americans are entitled to if they pay into the system. The other is a welfare system. It's income and asset based. So we have Title II is the insurance program. Title 16 is the welfare program. And the basic standard is a person has medical impairments that prevent them from doing work that exists in the national economy for a period of 12 months or more. And what we've tried to do is to, A, use much more up-to-date medical information. When I started, we had regulations for significant areas of medicine that had not been updated since the 1970s. And I knew from biotech that the world changes much more quickly than that. So now we're on a cycle where we're trying to keep them all updated at least every 5 years and more often if we can. And we're pretty much living up to that. The other thing is there had been an attitude in the agency generally that if diseases or conditions were much below the orphan drug line, those were sufficiently rare that we didn't have to provide terribly detailed guidance. But when you aggregate all those, that's an awful lot of the cases. It's where a disproportionate amount of the time, money, and effort were going, and it's where disproportionate error was. So one of the things that we've done is go into much more detail, into much less common diseases and conditions to address that. And we've also been able to fast track a lot of the rare diseases and conditions by picking them out by computer in advance. And many of these are devastating. And there's no question that basically the diagnosis should allow an allowance of disability. And then there's a group where you have to do a limited review, but the overwhelming number of cases should be allowed. So we're pulling those out now in the front end. We're doing about 6% of our cases that way, and those are generally decided in sort of 10 to 15 days on average. So that's a big improvement. Before, when the machine went on automatic pilot for the standard cases, we'd ask for an enormous amount of medical evidence. We'd ask for an enormous amount of vocational evidence. If the disease or condition were obscure, we'd have to go out and try to get specialists to advise us on those things, when really there was only one right answer. So that's all wasted effort. So that's, I think, been one of the great successes of the agency, and we've received some awards and things like that for the program, and other agencies are starting to look at if there are ways they can duplicate that with their programs.
So, Michael, SSA, and we talked about this, you mentioned before the increase in the disability and reconsideration claims as a result of the economy, which produces a backlog. In April 2010, you testified that SSA's plan is to reduce the initial claims backlog to a pre-recession level by 2014. Would you elaborate a little bit more on SSA's efforts to improve the timelines and the quality, and talk a little bit about something called quick disability determination and compassionate allowance? Tell us about that and some of the other initiatives.
Sure. So let me start by saying, you know, we have these. The states do the first two levels of review before we get into hearings and appeals. And, of course, the best way to solve any backlog problem is, to the extent that you're making errors, to pick them up quicker and earlier in the process. And we're doing a pretty good job of that. And one of the ways we've done it is we're using much more sophisticated software for structured review and prompting with examiners in the state level. It's a system we call ECAT, and that's had a substantial effect on improving quality. There are other things that you do to improve quality, but the other thing that we've done that I think has fairly dramatically improved the system is that we have two types of fast-track cases. We have the compassionate allowance cases, which are basically the cases where, by definition, you're disabled. You know that with medical certainty. And someone that has that confirmed diagnosis should just be given benefits as quickly as possible. So that's what we do. It's sort of a radical concept. But right now, about 1% of our cases and growing more rapidly or compassionate allowances, about 5% are QDD cases. And we think that number, we took an educated guess, it was largely my back of the envelope estimate with our 2008 plan, that we could do 6 to 9% of our cases that way. Looks like we're going to hit the upper end of that range. We've been working with NIH, which has been very helpful. They're using some sophisticated programs and templates to identify diseases and conditions that look very similar on key dimensions with our current compassionate allowances, and that looks like a very productive partnership. So we have as many as maybe 25 more that we're going to be announcing in the spring. And also, when the economy recovers, the percentage of cases handled on the fast tracks will increase, because almost none of the 600,000 or so extra cases we're getting that are recession-related fall into these categories. They're people that have medical challenges but had been working and a lot of times don't meet our definition of disability. So I think when the profile of cases goes back to something approaching economic normalcy and we do another round of expansions with a collaboration with NIH, we probably will be up around the 9%.
So just to continue talking about disability a little bit more, the timeliness and accuracy of SSA's disability decisions and the hearing at the adjudicated judge level is at the forefront of congressional and agency concerns, as it has been. What is SSA doing to eliminate the backlog of the hearings and prevent their reoccurrence, as well as how are you leveraging technology and enhancing the training for the judges?
A lot of this is really, for the first time, looking seriously at our hearings operation as an operation and you doing fairly basic things in terms of operations management. So we've moved to uniform business processes. We've asked the hard question and gotten consensus among the management judges. what's the best way to do certain things. You know, we started, had about 142 hearing offices, and there were at least 142 different ways of handling a lot of the things that we do over and over again. So although that was often an emotional and difficult process, we got a fair amount of consensus that there were certain best ways to handle cases. And so that has helped particularly some of our least efficient offices move up very quickly. We screen judges much more carefully than we did before. We never did background checking before. We've also had success in persuading the Office of Personnel Management to refresh the list on a regular basis. So I think we've hired very good people. We've checked their background carefully, so we think they're going to be responsible judges. I think we've improved morale. We've improved productivity. We've improved processes. We do a lot more with technology. So not only have we brought down the average wait to a hearing from about 540 days to about 340 days, we're much tighter around the mean by the end of this year, because we also set targets for reducing the number of aged cases, the cases that have been waiting the longest. We will be able to look up and say nobody's waiting 2 years anymore, whereas 5 years ago we had people waiting 4 years.
Now, keeping on that line of thought around service enhancement, I'd like to understand how SSA is leveraging health IT and applying it innovatively to enhance service.
So what we were been very excited by health IT from the get-go, and the Recovery Act encouraged us to spend approximately $25 million getting ready for that. So we've done pilots. We work with MedVirginia. We work with a couple other of the smaller entities around the country that are pretty much already there in terms of supplying electronic medical records. And it's worked extremely well from our vantage point in time. It's not quite as well as we dreamed in the beginning, because, you know, we discovered that what was coming over the transom had a lot of extraneous reimbursement information, other information we had to screen out, that we had to do some redesigns of our business processes to handle some of the information that was coming in somewhat differently. But even with those fixable problems, we were cutting our review times by probably in the neighborhood of about 40%. And I think we can do better over time. The problem for us right now is just very few insurers are there yet. It's coming, but it's painfully slow. I mean, there was tens of billions of dollars in the Recovery Act provided to the private sector to accelerate this. And it's coming, but it's slow. When health IT comes, your head is going to snap back and say, it's amazing how much things are changing. And it will be changing in a good way. So I'm excited about it. I mean, I'm a little frustrated because 5 years ago, I thought all the improvement would happen on my watch, and that's not going to happen. You know, at this point, it's going to be 3 more years probably before it's common enough in the private sector to affect most of what we're doing. But we're getting there.
How is SSA improving its service and stewardship efforts? We will ask Michael Astrew, Commissioner of the U.S. Social Security Administration, when our conversation continues on the Business of Government Hour.